Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast, and today I'm going to be focusing on the train journey made in the April of 1917 to Petrograd by Vladimir Lenin and the exiled Bolsheviks, facilitated by the German Empire in order to destabilise the Russian war effort of the newly created provisional government. The journey began on Easter Sunday, 1917, in the late afternoon. It was Vladimir Lenin and his wife Nadezhda Krupskaya and 30 of the party faithful who had lived in exile with him in various places, particularly in Switzerland. The train left Zurich for Germany, and this was something that had been obviously planned by the German government and German secret military intelligence. Now, I find that there's some fascinating resonances with the present day. Now, we always have to be kind of careful of drawing comparisons. But in the First World War, after 3 years of deadlock, all sides were trying to find new and innovative ways not to destabilise their enemies on the battlefield, but to destabilise them on the home front. These were the beginnings of political and psychological operations against the populations of the enemy powers. The British had fomented a revolt in the Middle East against the Ottoman Empire. The Germans tried to foment revolt against the British and the French empires, Muslim populations, and they also tried to foment revolt in Ireland, and revolt in Russia, or a political crisis in Russia, was also another means of creating opportunities for Germany to win a war that it was now desperate to conclude, as the economic realities of that war began to place almost unimaginable pressures on the Kaiserreich. It was, however, a long shot. Lenin was an unknown figure in Russia. He'd spent most of his adult life outside of Russia. He was known on the fringes of the radical left in Europe, the Socialist International, but that was about it. There was very little knowledge of him in Russia, and the Germans had no real way of putting any faith in the idea that he might be able to affect events in Russia significantly. Perhaps Lenin might be able to cause the provisional government a significant amount of trouble. The idea that he might be able to seize power was certainly not something that the Germans could foresee. They made sure that he was well funded and that he could return home with the Bolshevik movement, which the Germans saw really as a means of kind of almost injecting a virus into the body of Russia. Since the overthrow of the Tsar, things diplomatically had actually got significantly better for Russia. Not only now in April 1917 was America poised on joining the war, but also France and Britain, a parliamentary monarchy and a democratic republic, both of them, were far more comfortable dealing with a provisional government and the possibility of the creation of a new constitutional republic than they were with an authoritarian czarist autocracy. There was going to be, in the eyes of Lloyd George, a far more equitable settlement for a democratic Russia at the end of the war than for an autocratic one. So the shifting events back in a different direction was a key strategic goal by Germany. In no way did Germany share any of the ambitions of Lenin, or of the Irish revolutionaries, or of jihadists in North Africa, or in the Indian Empire. But they saw them as useful assets. These were things that could be weaponized against their enemies. The plans that Germany's strategic thinkers in Berlin had didn't seem really to come off particularly well. There were 3,000 Muslim prisoners, for example, who were interned at a special camp, the Half Moon Camp in Zussen, in the German capital in Berlin, who, after 1914, there were one in three soldiers fighting for Britain on the Western Front in 1914 came from India. So there had been a large number of Indian POWs. These 3,000 men were sent to Mesopotamia and the Persian Front to fight for Germany and for the Ottoman Empire. But 3,000 soldiers doesn't really buy you an awful lot in either propaganda or military terms. In 1916, there's a further setback when the Easter Rising really fails to bring about a revolution in Ireland and is brutally suppressed. The British obviously create for themselves an enormous disaster waiting to happen by their handling of the Easter Rising, but that's really at a point where the war is lost for Germany. Roger Casement, who had been in Ireland, in Germany for 2 years, the Anglo-Irish nobleman who had exposed the crimes of King Leopold in the Belgian Congo a decade and a half earlier, tried to create an Irish brigade from prisoners of war in German captivity. But this, he was largely kind of rebuffed. There were Irish Catholic soldiers who, in Casement's worldview, would have been natural recruits, but these were men who had loyalty to their comrades, who were in captivity, who had fought the Germans and saw the Germans as their enemy. They may have had at least mixed feelings towards the British, but that in itself did not make them revolutionaries against British rule, with all the risks that entailed. Casement himself was quickly arrested following his return to Ireland off the coast of Kerry in April 1917, when he came ashore from a German U-boat and was shot dead, executed for treason in August that year. When the Tsar was overthrown in February 1917, the strategy of smuggling revolutionaries back into Russia suddenly comes back on the table. All of a sudden, the overthrow of the Tsar is kind of a game changer. The plans to cause chaos and anarchy within enemy countries on the Allied side had long been a kind of a strategic goal. And German embassies, particularly in third countries, in neutral countries, had started to look for troublemakers. And in Switzerland, there was a plentiful supply of them. So Russian subversives that could be attracted and found were like gold dust. The name of Lenin becomes high on the lists of the German intelligence in 1915. This list is kind of reawoken in 1917 by the German Foreign Ministry, and which informed the Army High Command that there was perhaps the right kind of person that could be sent back to Russia, and Switzerland was the place to find him. Lenin had been in Europe since 1900. He had lived at first in Switzerland, and then he'd moved to Munich. He edited the revolutionary newspaper Iskra, and in 1902 he created his answer to the issues that he thought was facing the revolutionary movement in Russia, his book What Is To Be Done, which essentially advocated a shortcut to revolution. The Marxist prognosis for revolution was that, well, Marx even said that it was probably better not to waste your time doing it in Russia because Russia wasn't ready. Lenin said, well, we are in Russia and we will have to make it ready. And instead of waiting for the working classes to emerge as a coherent class, or waiting for the kind of peasants to get their act together and emerge out of their kind of feudal past. Instead, you need a vanguard party to make the revolution happen, not a class doing it, but a party. And this would mean that once the party had seized power, then they could retrospectively bring about socialism by educating the population in socialism, as Lenin put it. And this would mean no small amount of brutality. This was the argument that split the Russian Social Democratic Party into Bolsheviks and Mensheviks. The Mensheviks saying that this was the road to tyranny, and they were, it would appear, largely correct. There was a power structure Lenin knew to help make this happen as well. Soviets, councils, workers' councils. These had spontaneously emerged during the 1905 revolution, and they had sprung up in the cities of the Russian Empire, and they were a way, Lenin thought, of replacing old power structures, and by controlling the Soviets, by allocating all power to the Soviets, but really controlling the Soviets by filling them with Bolshevik members, one could, Lenin thought, take power or create an alternative system of power with which to run the country. That and no small amount of terror, because terror would be the way that you would eliminate class enemies, and also the way that you would coerce the peasantry into doing what you say, the peasantry being a naturally reactionary force in Lenin's view. So between the 1905 revolution and the 1917 revolution, over that 12 years, Lenin had briefly returned to Russia in 1905, but was forced to flee again.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
He spent 12 years in European cities, Geneva, Paris, London, Krakow. And from 1916 onwards, he was in Zurich. Zurich was an interesting place during the First World War. It was obviously a heavily infiltrated by various different intelligence networks. But it was also one of Switzerland is obviously one of the few islands of peace during the war. And it is also one of the places where modernism, radical thought, culture and art are at their kind of epicentre. It is where the Dadaist art movement comes from, for example. It was a place where writers and intellectuals, but also revolutionaries, managed to shelter themselves. So a relatively kind of permissible environment for people like Lenin to exist in. Switzerland was full of disputing and dissenting Russian revolutionaries who spent much of their time arguing over the ways in which a revolution should or could manifest itself back in Russia, what a revolutionary society would look like, and whether the workers or the peasants were the vanguard of the revolution. And this kind of schismatic approach to revolutionary politics is something that has really kind of dogged the left since the Second International that was opened in July 1889. In part, the movement was divided between a democratic socialist left, those who were kind of largely reformist in their views, people that wanted to maintain the basic structures of capitalism but make it nicer for everybody, and people like Lenin who said, well, that is simply a way of perpetuating the exploitation of capitalism. Making it nicer is actually making the conditions for the proletariat worse in a way. What you need to do is make things, allow capitalism to push them to revolution. And there was a long-standing belief from the very inception of the Bolshevik faction all the way through to Stalin during the 1930s that there was nothing more dangerous than a social democrat. And Lenin was well aware of the threat that social democrats posed in his view, in 1914 everyone from the British Labour Party all the way through to the German Social Democratic Party embraced the war and set aside their sort of limited class struggle, as Lenin would have seen it, to embrace a kind of a patriotic fervour. The Social Democrats in Germany were in part motivated by the belief that if the Tsar's armies turned up in Berlin, that would be the end for progressive politics for Germany for more than a generation. And it was the decision by social democratic parties across Europe to vote through war budgets in various parliaments, diets, Reichstags and assemblies that really meant that war was fiscally possible. And that there was no last-minute opposition, the likes of which Lenin believed there should have been. So his uncompromising criticism of the reformist or democratic left was based around a belief that they had abandoned international class solidarity the old Marxist dictum of workers of the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains. Lenin eventually hoped that the First World War would turn into a European class civil war, where the working classes of Europe would fight against the ruling classes of Europe, and he believed that this is what should eventually be encouraged. Lenin despaired of a revolution occurring in late 1916. He spoke to a kind of a younger cohort of revolutionaries, not knowing that revolution was but weeks away, saying, it won't happen in my lifetime, hopefully it will happen in yours, and you guys have to carry the torch for us. Trotsky was in New York when the February Revolution happened, and there was only a handful of Bolsheviks in Russia, particularly Stalin and Kamenev, who were exiled in Siberia, again, who were all completely taken by surprise. Lenin and his contemporaries had been spending their days reading and writing in the public libraries of Zurich, and they were desperate to hear reports of what was happening in Russia. They managed to get hold of newspapers, both Russian editions and European ones, but only in early March 1917, did Lenin genuinely understand what had happened in Russia. Now, there's an important point to consider here. For us, the events of the revolution are fixed. They have happened. We know what the chronological sequence of things were. For people at the time, events were highly fluid. Change was happening day by day, hour by hour. There was little understanding of what was going to come next, or little ability to predict it. The outcome of the revolution was open, and there was every possibility that there may be some kind of counter-revolution to undo it, or perhaps a suitable candidate would be found for the throne, or some figure would come to replace the Romanov dynasty in its entirety, a military dictator, perhaps. In 1905, Lenin had missed the chance to fully influence events, and he was determined that that wasn't going to happen again. In 1917, here he is in his mid to late 40s, painfully aware that the opportunity to shape events in Russia was finally here, and it would not come again. Getting back to Russia as quickly as possible was therefore the name of the game. It was absolutely essential that this happened. He was aware, he wasn't naive about this, he knew that in order to get across Russia he would need the support of the Germans. It was unimaginable that the Allies would give their blessing to anything that would take Russia out of the war, and the Bolsheviks appeared on Allied watch lists. Trotsky was arrested in Nova Scotia on his way back to Russia at the behest of the Russian authorities. Though he was interned for a while, they had to let him go. So the Allies were well aware that there were forces desperate to remove Russia from the war. Perhaps they didn't understand the ideology that was going to be imposed on Russia and what that would mean for the West. Lenin, of course, was under no illusions that he was going to be used by the Germans, and that a Bolshevik revolution in Russia justified this, that there was, in revolutionary circumstances, no guarantee that one would work with the kinds of people one chose. But he knew there was a possibility of him getting the better end of the bargain. In many ways, Germany was the real objective as far as the Bolsheviks were concerned. What the Bolsheviks eventually hoped to do was to have a revolution in Russia and hope that Germany would seize the example, and that the German Kaiserreich would fall to revolution too. This was essential in Lenin's eyes, because if this didn't happen, they would be stuck in a large backward peasant state with precious few means of modernizing it. If the Kaiserreich became revolutionary and overthrew the Kaiser, then the natural solidarity that Lenin believed existed between workers would allow the German working class to come to Russia and help modernize the country. This was the big picture. Lenin negotiated with the German foreign ministry and the government, and he demanded that the Bolsheviks on the train have extraterritorial status, which meant that the train compartment would not be German territory. It would be Russian territory. This meant that unless, as they were non-combatants, there would be no jurisdiction for the German army on the train. German army officers would have no contact with the revolutionaries who were travelling, and the train, once this was agreed, crossed into German territory and went northwards all the way across the Baltic Sea to Stockholm, and then another train took them via Finland to Petrograd. There was virtually no difficulty in crossing back into Russia, and on the 16th of April 1917, Lenin arrived at the Finland station, where Bolsheviks greeted him enthusiastically with an armoured car, some playing the Marseillaise when he alighted, waving red flags. And with that, Lenin had returned home to Russia. Okay, well, I hope you found that useful and interesting. And if you want to read from where I've been using source material today, read The Vanquished by Robert Gerwath. It's a brilliant addition to the discussion of the First World War. You know, this is revisionist views of the First World War from your Adam Tooze's onwards. This is kind of my thing, really. And it talks about why it was that the First World War doesn't really end in 1918, as is popularly thought. The shooting between the great powers ends in 1918. Mass killing goes on in Central and Eastern Europe up until, and the Middle East up until 1923. Okay, well, it'd be great to hear your thoughts on this. So swing by the Explaining History Facebook group. I'll put the link below. And hopefully we'll catch you there, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. All the best. Bye-bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.